session number 17747, reel 44.
Did Major Kennedy get away with his refusal to obey the order?
Yes, I think it became fudged because although the CO had the good sense not to continue a stand-up row with this experienced major, I don't think formally conceded, which would have been difficult to do. And it was left, I think I'm right in saying, it was left that Kennedy would not be obliged to take up these gun positions if reconnaissance suggested that it wasn't sensible. And reconnaissance parties went out, and the reconnaissance parties themselves were shelled. And they came back, and their reports meant that an immediate move was not sensible or possible because the guns would have been shelled on their way to take up the positions. This meant that there was no need to test the validity of Major Kennedy's objections, although to an extent it was fairly self-evident that his misgivings were well-founded.
So Colonel really was given a golden bridge by the reconnaissance party.
That's right. It was a way out which satisfied honour, if you like, on both sides. Mm. Kennedy was proved right, but not in a way which could be held against the Colonel.
Mm. Did the Colonel show any resentment against Major Kennedy
subsequently? No, to be fair, I don't think he did. I think their relationship was never very warm, as I recall from my sort of bird's eye view in headquarters. But I think, you know, they were both professionals in their different ways. I was going to use an awful pun by saying that one as a rancor showed his rancor, but he lost his rag, did Kennedy, no doubt about that, and Sinclair was more detached. His whole background was not one which would condition a chap to showing emotions too readily. He was a cold person anyway by temperament, and whatever he thought about it, he swallowed it.
So he showed a patrician reserve.
That's one way of putting it, yes.
Were there any active partisans for the Colonel? Because it sounds as though he was not terribly popular.
I don't remember meeting anyone who liked him, if that's what you mean. No, he was not reviled particularly. There's no reason to, because he was not incompetent, as the previous Colonel but one plainly had been. He was not a poser, he was a professional, he was cold, pretty humourless. He was not a bad man at all, but he was not a naturally popular figure. And of course, I suppose one of the things, it's very difficult to put yourself in the position of, is somebody coming new from a staff job into a unit which has been in action, as this regiment had been long before I joined it. I mean, they'd been in action for 2 years now throughout North Africa and Italy, and he was in a sense a usurper. Not that they would resent this, because there are always changes of personnel, but you do react better if there's a certain amount of humility, and he was not a humble man. The next day, I was in the counting business, because I counted that I received my 51st letter from home, from my father, and only a fortnight ago I was sorting through, and I find I've got them all. Quite interesting, this was the 51st. I joined RHQ, since attack HQ is not required. Joined RHQ in a delightful village of Borello on the Savio River, busy with working out possible fire plans. And the next day, 24th of October, the Gurkhas attack, and it goes better than expected. The CO goes off with a small tacket to a small TAC HQ with the brigadier. I have to follow with the scout car when the road is clear. The battle surges ahead, all objectives taken, and the Germans head back towards Forli. They don't like Gurkhas.
Had you observed this before, you know, the Gurkhas?
Oh, they had an aura about them, yes. It reminded me something you were talking earlier over lunch about the French army, and you probably know about the Goums.
Goumier, yes.
Yes, what, they were Moroccans, were they? Then
yep.
They were regarded with the same kind of sort of atavistic dread as the Gurkhas.
Well, Goums were irregulars from the mountains of Morocco.
Ah. Mm.
And they were actually paid a bounty for every pair of ears they brought in. And so they used to go out at night collecting
trophies.
Trophies, yes.
Mm. Mm. No, I mean, the Gurkhas were... there was a mythology surrounding them. How far it's well placed or misplaced, I don't know, but... I mean, the German camps, no doubt, as well as ours, were filled with stories of the Gurkhas attacking by night quite silently, and the Germans the next morning finding the wrong heads on the wrong bodies. This kind of horror story. However, by Wednesday, the following day, the bridges over the rivers were still not fit to take my scout car. So I had to settle down to another day in RHQ. I managed to get a third stripe for Bombardier Harvey, our mess corporal. I think he must have been a corporal. No, he's a bombardier. I never remember whether he belonged to the catering corps or the gunners, but I think he was a gunner. The next day, stranded. The river rises about 4 feet. It rains as I've never seen it rain before, and then the bridge is washed away. We have no means of supply except mules. We're on the wrong side of the river. Four British boys cut off on the other side of the Ronca, R-O-N-C-A, Ronca River, are attacked by Tiger tanks and presumably killed. The CO is also cut off at the TAC headquarters. This is... glorious Italian weather, October style. It's absolutely foul. By the 27th, it's quiet. There's an immense amount of naffy goodies coming forward. Some more bridges are now built by the engineers. An advance reconnaissance is done. I go round muddy gun positions with the second in command, Major Churchill, who's very good with the men. He was quite popular. And then since there's no fighting going on, there's a whiskey party in the sergeant's mess. Next day, 28th October, the 4th Brigade are moving still further up, so we get ready for another tactical headquarters. One of my fellow subalterns goes sick, which reduces the number of people. For duty officer means longer night duties all round. 29th October, move from our excellent Borello billets to tactical headquarters. Then the tactical headquarters goes still further forward, and once again I cannot follow in the scout car, which this time manages to break its rear axle. So go to RHQ. Which is now in a hill village called Bertinoro, which I remember very well. A pretty village, it's shown on the map as being not far from south-east of Forli.
So again, it sounds like you're closing up towards the delta, just...
Yes, tending, as you rightly surmise, to go also
from northwestwards.
Parallel
yes.
to Route 9. We're
yes.
working up Route 9.
Yes.
Towards the Fifth Army. I think the dividing line between the armies was probably sort of on an axis of Bologna.
Yes.
Eastward of that would be the westward of that would be the Americans. Mm. We were to the 8th Army, was to the east. I've got maps in some of the books which show this fairly clearly with the layout of divisions.
And was there at this stage a sign of the German resistance diminishing or fading, or was there, were they still holding on?
My impression is that they were still holding on south of the River Po, which is still some considerable way off.
Yes.
We were nowhere near the Po, and they were retreating as slowly as they could towards the Po, with that, the knowledge that the Po would be a sort of ultimate line of resistance. The extent to which the movement, the retreat, was going according to their plans or was expedited by our own attacks, it's very difficult to know. Presumably their generals had sticking points, and if they were pushed back more quickly, they would have it would have become a rout all too readily, as indeed it did once the Po was reached in the spring. But at this stage, I mean, they were still in control of their own destiny up to a point.
Yes.
They were not being forced back beyond an unreasonably quickly. It was a tolerable, tenable situation from their point of view as well as ours. It was still a sort of neat war front. There was another attack planned by the 43rd Gurkhas, but then it was called off. The bridgehead over the Ronca River was steadily extended. I think what was happening, I suspect, was that since the mountain range ran from north-west to south-east, that we were still in the process between the two armies of clearing the Germans off the hills. We got them off at our south end of this thing, but it's a very steep sort of northwest slope of the hills, and they were probably still well entrenched in them further north than our own area, and needed to be driven back onto the plain. Yes, I noted that our regimental headquarters at this time, just temporarily, was acting as a sort of forward headquarters Royal Artillery, and we have CRAs, artillery brigadiers, with us all day long. Bertinoro, I suppose, was quite useful. It was tactically well situated.
In what sense? Was it a road net or something of that sort?
Not a road net, but it was high up. It was not far from the plain, yet it was overlooking the plain, and therefore was not it's not like being overlooked by the Germans. It was rather the other way around. And it was a big enough village to support quite a number of billets, sound billets. Winter was coming on. We needed to be well housed.
Were you being kitted out for winter in the field at this stage? Were you getting clothing and other equipment necessary?
I think we were already into...
For some time
we'd already been in proper battle dress. Mm. And my guess, more than a guess, is that we were now into top coats.
Mm. But, I mean, surely you would need also waterproof gear rather than just warm clothing.
Yes, I can't... I mean, the waterproof gear in the army, in my recollection, is that it was pretty primitive. I mean, it was ground sheets, really, which doubled as capes.
Yes, sort of poncho. You know,
that's right, yes. That was about the limit. I mean, there were no raincoats issued. I had an officer's trench coat, but this didn't apply to 9/10 of the people who were not officers. So it was really a matter of getting wet and keeping off what you could with these poncho things, which I think had sort of eyelets in the corners for drawing together the string to make a sort of garment, or equally for tying down to make a base for sleeping. I noted that our Indian troops frightened the Italians, and this is straight colour thing. And I'm asked by a pretty girl in the village to keep them out, please. It's strange.
So some of your Indian troops would have been no darker than an Italian from the Mezzogiorno.
That's perfectly true, they wouldn't. But, I mean, two or three thoughts arise there. One is they didn't see many people from the Mezzogiorno, and the other is that there are facial characteristics which are not just to do with the colour of the skin. And, of course, the Sikhs, if we had them, as presumably we did have some in this, with their headgear, would be...
They would stand out, wouldn't
stand
they?
Stand out, mm. Yes. And as for the Gurkhas, well, I mean, they stand out anyway.
Yes. But Gurkhas generally, when are generally renowned for being well-behaved.
Oh, yeah. Oh, all of these troops are well-behaved. Mm. This is why I say it was a sheer prejudice thing. Mm. It's nothing to do with misbehaviour. It's just a sort of atavistic thing about...
Fear of the unknown.
The unknown, and colour in particular, and whatever the Germans may have told them, or Mussolini may have told them. I mean, you're dealing with two rather race-conscious gentlemen there, Hitler and Mussolini, and they'd all of these youngsters had known no other thing than Mussolini, just as a lot of people these days knew nothing but Mrs. Thatcher. I mean, I don't draw the comparison too closely, but over a period of time, it's the same syndrome. However, the pretty girl who asked us to keep the Indians out, the adjutants and I thought we'd cash in on this, and we took over her house as our billet. It seemed to fill every need. And I'm joking, but it was just amusing that we did take that house over as our billet. And we worked on fire plans. The CO was at tactical headquarters, and the TAC HQ was now getting quite near to Forli on Route 9 across the North Italian plain. We're on the last ridges of the huge Apennine Range at last. Now, we'd already been at the verge of the plain down at Sant'Arcangelo, but now we were up further northwest doing the same thing again, getting down to the plain.
Well, if you're at Forli, then really you had more or less quit the mountains.
We're now getting near Forli, I said.
Oh, near Forli, yes.
Near Forli.
Yes.
Now, Forli is in just off these mountains. If you looked it on the map, it's only a mile or two, literally, before the hills begin. As is Cesena, as is Faenza, and Imola, and the other places. Here again, Winston Churchill thinks the war will last till next spring. On night duty, 1 till 4. God, it was a wretched, tiring business night, this night duty.
Was it because there was too much to do, or was it because there was not enough to do?
Well, it's the breakage. Why the duty, or why tired?
No, why so?
Why wretched?
Hmm.
Oh, because of never getting a night's sleep, you know. As simple as that. I mean, so it's the broken nights. It isn't as though you're on duty all night and then you go to bed all day. It was these half nights.
Yes.
I hadn't realised, actually, until reading through this, that it went on for so long, and it helps me to understand my lifetime of insomnia more readily. Next day, the CO returns at 0800 from TAC headquarters, and the atmosphere immediately gets colder again. For example, I had heard Winston Churchill's comment about the war going until next spring, and when the CO got back and had settled in and had breakfast, I went in to talk to him business about this and that, and I said to him, by the way, Churchill says that the war will probably go on till next spring. What was his response? Mr. Churchill to you. So I thought, by God, you cretin. And you know, So, Ian Tophill, who, lovely man, the adjutant, we had a day, fairly leisurely day, talking with the locals, including the girls, speaking largely in French, since our Italian was never very good. I mean, we were talking mostly to our own people, or negotiating in very basic Italian for goods and services, but we couldn't really converse. But we some school French, so the common language was French.
And they could speak French too.
They could speak French, because they were students.
You see, yes.
Tended to be university students who had been locked out of the universities by the war, fighting. I think the particular girl here whose house we used as a billet was a student, I think, at Bologna.
When you moved into her house, did she stay there, or did she remove?
Oh, they moved upstairs.
They went upstairs.
Yes, they were upstairs. Mm. We simply took over the ground floor, which, if I remember rightly, had, I don't know what her father was, but there was a sort of grain store with a big room attached to it, which we used. But from the grain store, there were stairs leading up into their quarters. But it was the Italian population is very difficult to suss out, because you didn't know how far these people were really long-term residents of the places we found them in,
or refugees,
or how far they themselves were refugees, or were renting accommodation to get out of the cities, which in many cases I'm sure they were. And later on, we billeted on with a whole family, including some highly intelligent student girls, not the boys, they're always girls, because the boys were away, you see.
In the army.
They'd been called up the army. Mm. So these 18, 19 year old girls were all without their brothers who were away, and sometimes without fathers as well. The mothers were all there, and grandmother usually, and some smaller babies. But you tended never really to find out properly whether this was where they lived permanently. Or whether they were refugees, as you say, refugees. As usual, I mean, the fact that they were students, the fact that they were reasonably well-to-do families, suggests that they were the sort of people who would have been able to buy their way out of the cities when the trouble came, and moved out for an indefinite period to safety, which obviously paid off.
Certainly if they come from Bologna. Bologna had been very heavily bombed.
Had it? I didn't know that. Well, I must have known at the time.
The Americans...
Yes. They did a carpet job on it, didn't they?
Well, they were going for the railway junction,
yes,
because
right.
it was
yes.
at the very heart of the North
that's
Italian
right.
railway network,
the
so
focus like
it was like
so.
Q, yes. Crew, rather.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Yes, so that would figure... Well, they perhaps saved their lives by being in these billets in these small hill towns or for the plain town. Things began to quieten down a bit 1st of November. The battle was further away. 43rd Brigade Gurkhas were out of the line again. And we reverted to the command of our own, in quotes, 56th Division again. We'd been under this 10th Indian Division. Gurkhas came out of the line, we ceased to support them, we moved back under control of the 56th Division.
Did you move physically?
No,
You were just in place and they took over
sector? That's right,
yes.
That's right. Our colonel became answerable, he was answerable to the CRA, Commander of Royal Artillery anyway, but for infantry purposes, presumably we came under the command straight away of the Major General, 56th Division, pending being attached to another infantry brigade.
Yes.
Which I haven't put here. I don't know who they were yet. Not much going on here. The war seems to have sort of faded away, as indeed it did begin to do. Yes, that's right. Saturday the 4th of November, here the regiments stay here some time, pending its fate, in other words, reallocation. Little work a dance is being arranged, much beer, a bottle of gin, party in our billet, Sunday the 5th, lovely autumn morning, promenade to mass, meet the girl Edda from our billet, take photos, she flirts with Ian Topill, the adjutant, better weather, then bad news, our rest is cut short. We are going to have to support an attack by 4th Division on our right. Now, is that 4th Division or 4th Indian? I don't know. And we're going to have to go to a new gun area on the plains. Ian Topill hears that his brigade major training posting is coming through. Will this mean a new adjutant? Sorry to be moving out. Been quite comfortable here. Reconnaissance parties move. The CO is worse than ever and the atmosphere is like a morgue. Ready to move. Hand over billets to 46th Division. Your Sherwood Forester friend.
Yes.
Play poker. End up on a quiet note talking to Ian. Write letters. Off at 6:15 the next morning. Onto the plains near a place called Forlimpopoli, which is a sort of outskirt of Forlì.
Suburb of Forlì.
Yes, that's right. The CO is happily called away to headquarters Royal Artillery of 4th Division for 48 hours. Sorry to be leaving Bertinoro, and it's very damp down on the plains. Back to the grindstone. Living in large farmhouse, a stud farm, very kind, honest people, not many troops around, a small amount of shelling, to headquarters Royal Artillery for maps, and go and see Edda in Bertinoro for half an hour on the way back, and she gives me a letter to deliver to Ian Topill.
Sounds as though this was becoming a serious affair.
Yes, it didn't, in fact, but I think these girls would give quite a lot to get hold of a British Army officer, you know, at this stage. I mean, we came, as far as they were concerned, from a wholly more prosperous sort of civilization, apart from being on the winning side.
Being on the winning side has always been a great advantage.
Yeah, I think it's a great aphrodisiac, being on the winning side. Yes, on Thursday the 9th of November we are now, the general comes, that presumably is our 56th Divisional General, but tells us nothing about the future. Great rumours about the division being broken up. The rumours abounded. I suppose they always do in war.
Yes.
Or perhaps always in the army, but certainly in war. About the division being broken up. Also about possibilities of Greece and Burma, etc. Meanwhile, the Germans have started attacking England with stratospheric rockets. Those are the V2s. Reminiscent of H.G. Wells. I work hard on the regimental war diary for October.
Sounds as though the writing up this war diary was a rather sporadic business.
Yes. It was not a...
Not a continuous day by day.
No, that's right.
Occupation.
And yet I must have had to keep notes otherwise it would have been impossible to do the job. But I mean, it's there. It's in PRO and it doesn't read brilliantly, but it reads cohesively.
Presumably you'd have kept rough notes day by day and then consolidated them into a fair copy.
Yes, exactly. And you see, for all this time, Forlì, we've been talking about Bertinoro overlooking Forlì, we've been talking about Forlì and Popoli, but only on the 10th of November do I say that Forlì has now been taken ahead of us. Very cold in the nights and there's the first snow on the hills. This is a bright, cold English, quote, day. A commanding officer, battery commander's conference going on in the mess. This is a forward area, a sort of peaceful no man's land. It was not in the rear, and it was not on a sort of immediate battle front, but it was fairly near to it. jeep breaks down, freezing rides back. Mm. It was just, uncomfortable.
Yes, does this mean you'd managed to get rid of the scout car, or simply that